The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing. Investment advice offered through Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor. Welcome back to Financial Focus Radio Show. Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management has offices in Bend, Eugene, and John Day, serving clients from all over the Northwest. Give us a call today for your free retirement review. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. Thanks for joining us on this 4th of July weekend, America's 250th birthday. Hopefully everybody is doing something cool and enjoying themselves on the day of this great American experiment, as we like to call it. Thankfully, this IPO happened while I was somewhere in Italy enjoying myself. But we all know that Josh got to deal with this. SpaceX became the largest IPO in history, raising about $86 billion. Before that, the largest IPO had been Saudi Aramco. They raised $26 billion in 2019. The IPO price for SpaceX was $135, giving it a valuation of $1.75 trillion. We know that the stock traded higher, traded all over the place. At one point, the market cap was essentially $3 trillion, which surpassed both Amazon and Microsoft, making it the fourth largest company in the world at one point. And so let's just look at the numbers. It's just crazy to me. Over the last 12 months, Amazon generated $91 billion in net income on $743 billion. Yes, you heard that right, in sales. Microsoft generated $125 billion in net income. Those numbers are crazy, on $318 billion in sales. SpaceX, on the other hand, generated a $9 billion loss on $19 billion in sales. So here's what I have to say about—
They're going to have $1 trillion in revenue by 2030.
Yeah, sure. SpaceX is definitely a great company and will go on to do a lot of great things. I do believe that to be true. But months from now, we'll look at this probably as some peak mania moment. Investors are valuing SpaceX stock as if its incredible future is already here. It's trading at 200 times sales. So 200 times sales means if you went to a convenience store that had $1 million in sales, not profit, but $1 million in selling, you know, Doritos and Cokes and all that, you would pay conceivably $200 million for that convenience store? I don't think so, but that's where SpaceX is trading.
You're not buying like SpaceX equity, right? I mean, or at least that's like the investment case, I would think, for the bulls, is that you're just buying essentially a call option on the genius of Elon Musk.
Yeah, but I think that, you know, but the point is, like, there's no margin for error in a world where there's always error, is what I would say about that, right?
Yeah.
So just be very, very careful. Okay. And remember, the lockup, you know, insiders can't sell. A lot of these insiders have been there for 10 years and have a ton of their net worth invested in this thing. They can start to sell their shares in August. So the market's going to be a flood of flooded with sellers that have very low cost basis for some liquidity. So just remember that.
Only 3% of the company was being floated. And of that 3%, you know, the majority of it has some version of a restriction attached to it. So at least in that initial fervor, you're just looking at this market imbalance between supply and demand. So, but in terms of peak fervor and whether that's some kind of inflection point, you know, I kind of think we got a couple more of these mega IPOs.
Oh, yeah,
to come.
Yeah, of course.
And OpenAI economics seem even worse. So
well, their
see.
Solution is just to have the government take a stake in it.
Yeah, I love that.
Jesus, what is this world coming to? So Josh is going to love this one. So this is how social media says that this is how millionaires today. Social media says this is how millionaires are made, through crypto, meme stocks, startups, and real estate flips. That's how social media thinks that millionaires in this country are made today. My kids are probably in that group. That's how they think millionaires are made. And the reality is, most millionaires are actually made through regular savings and investment accounts, including your 401k. The number of 401k millionaires at Fidelity has the biggest book of 401k assets in the world. There's now 665,000 401k millionaires just at Fidelity. So remember, You know, this is a unique time when those meme stocks and, you know, crypto and real estate flipping, that unique
did
time.
Did you see that study that Robert Frank put out on CNBC earlier this week that like 88% of millennials are looking to increase their exposure to alts? Namely real estate, specifically real estate. And I looked at that and I was like astonished because it – do they not understand like the implications of leverage and interest and the interest rate cycle and all this stuff relative to that?
You tell me,
class?
They're like, your peers. I don't understand them.
I mean, we have been. I feel like we have been brainwashed to. And we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, Josh, you should. You know what you should do at the cocktail parties that you go to with other millennials? You should bring this up with them and tell them how stupid they are.
Well, I mean, if you lived in Bend, like you're now looking at, you know, essentially we're going on for close to 5 years of negative compound returns on single family real estate as an asset class.
Oh, Josh is talking blasphemy. We're going to have to inherit him. You're barely a millennial, so you should just call yourself a Gen Xer.
Yeah, I'm a nihilist.
That's
the definition of Gen X is you're all nihilists. Right.
Yeah, hegemonic masculinity. All right, let's talk about so Josh, we should talk about the lost decade and what that was.
There's really been two.
Yeah, but the one that's most people can remember, and let's talk about what it was and why it's so important as a lesson for today. If you're 55 or 50 years and older. Because, you know, this thing happened. It could absolutely happen again. There's a lot of the components that are lining up for it to happen again. And so it is really flippin' important if you want to retire and you're retired and want to stay retired that you understand what happened during that lost decade and there were solutions to it. And so let's talk about what was the most recent lost decade.
The most recent lost decade, of course, was the first decade of the 2000s where, you know, of course, over that 10-year period, the S&P 500 had a negative return, which, you know, most baby boomers were in the midst of the accumulation phase of their life. So it was a very traumatic experience, you know, as the millennium dawned. Remember, the NASDAQ cratered beginning in March of 2000, fell 78%. The dot-com boom kind of turned into this sharp sell-off. Stocks ultimately recovered, not so, you know, but it really then, of course, we had the great financial crisis. And so by the end of the decade, you were looking at a negative 10-year total return number on the S&P 500.
The importance of that is if you were taking money from your account during that period, right, or just retired and you were just invested in stocks, you had a real rough go of it.
But so the crazy stat from this decade, right, is if you were in the S&P 500, $1 million invested, you ended the decade, December 31st, 2009, you had $909,000 left if you were in an S&P 500 index fund. If you'd been in 1 month T-bills, you had $1.3 million.
That's crazy.
It is really crazy. But there was kind of a silver lining, and you know the silver lining was that a diversified portfolio through that decade actually did quite well. You know, we could break it down by asset class, but emerging markets were up 400% in the decade. Small cap value was up 231%. REITs were, real estate investment trusts were up 175. Value stocks were up 50%. International was up almost 30. Bonds, of course, did quite well. You know, you ended up just in short-term T-bills, you had a 30% return over the decade. But the whole point is like large cap growth as an asset class. And it really kind of, you know, if you go back to 1998 to 2013, you know, it did 2% annualized. So like these asset class outperformance windows move in these very large, long periods of time that can encapsulate like half of the accumulation phase for the average investor. And, you know, we don't want to get too excited about it, but it's looking like we're at one of those turning points when large cap growth, all the free cash flow evaporates overnight, and all of a sudden it's flowing to different asset classes that now, you know, on an 18-month basis have pretty dramatic outperformance. And so when you go back and you look at that blended portfolio from 2000 through the end of 2009, that $1 million ended up with 1.86 million. And so it's that argument of diversification. You know, it feels like you're eating peas in the midst of it when one asset class is doing the best. But when it's performance, you know, when we revert to a world where diversification matters, it really makes a difference, especially when you're taking income.
And you want to make that bet as a retiree? Absolutely not. So diversify. Make sure you get the asset allocation right, especially if you're going to retire. All right. When we come back, we're going to talk about backdoor IRA, backdoor Roth IRA contributions, and how the logistics of that work for you high earners. So stick around.
Get your free 1-hour retirement review. Meet with a Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management Investment Advisor today for free. It's our offer to you as a listener to the show. Give us a call today to schedule your portfolio review. 800-743-0988. Again, 800-743-0988. Financial Focus Radio Show is online all the time via iTunes, Spotify, and Spreaker. Catch past shows online or by finding us on iTunes.
If you'd like to take one of us up on a free retirement review, one of us will give you an hour of our time here in the office or on the phone or via Zoom to talk about anything in your financial life. So if you have at least $750,000 of investable dollars, give our office a call to get one of those meetings scheduled. Our number here is 800-743-0988, or you can email us. Go to our website, northwestquadrantwealth.com. Let us know you'd like a free retirement review. I can't think of a single example in my whole life where keeping it simple hasn't worked, against us. We've made mistakes, but they weren't because we kept it simple. That comes from the famous Charlie Munger, Warren Buffett's now deceased partner. So I am the poster child for keeping it simple and not working. I just think, especially in investing, it's when the data shows you that being simple in your investment strategy leads to the most success, why would you not do it? Why would you like try to push water uphill when just going along with the market, finding, instead of looking for the needle in the haystack, just buying the haystack and that resulting in great success, as Borat once said, why wouldn't you do that? Keep it simple. Too many of you think you have it figured out and you have yet to be humbled. And so I would say the best lessons as it relates to our business that Josh and I ever learned didn't come from any course we took in college, or it came from a bear market and being humbled by the market and thinking that we were geniuses prior to the humbling and realizing that the market is great at humbling people that think they have it figured out.
But also so much of our industry, it's built on the extracting from a perceived problem. It's just like, in the RIA space today, embedded capital gains are now the problem that we're solving for. And so there's the creation of all of these products to solve for taxes, because we have this problem of making all of this money. And the industry preys against your psychology. If you're a doctor out there and you are an intellectual heavyweight, so to speak, they want to sell you on something that's sophisticated and not available to normal people. And all of these things prey on your logical fallacies.
That's not true in our business. That's true in all businesses. So there are some investing lessons I think that are important to remember right now. A good stretch can change your expectations. And so the last 3 years, we've seen exceptional returns. The S&P has returned an average of nearly 23% a year with dividends reinvested the last 3 years since the bear market we saw in 2022. 2. And so that's changing expectations. And it's really not just the last 3 years. The S&P has returned 14% annually over the last decade. And so after a run like that, it's natural for you out there for your expectations for returns to change. You start to think that 14% returns are normal, and you might even start planning your retirement around them. But just because that's what's happened over the last 10 years doesn't mean that's going to happen over the next 10 years. And that's the important part of that, right? Where people are changing expectations. Josh has told me that he has peers that have said, I can't retire on just 15% returns. And you're like, whoa, if that guy can get 15% returns, he is the top 0.01% of investors in the history of the world. And so his reality is his returns are probably going to be less than half of that. So you got to remember, and Jack Bogle, who started Vanguard, was really good at reminding people, where do returns in the stock market come from? They come from two places, right? They come from the dividends that companies pay, and the growth in their earnings. That's it. That's the only thing that's going to drive a stock over time. You know, how much the company is going to grow earnings. And so if we think about the companies that make up the S&P 500, they might grow earnings, let's call it 4 or 5% over long periods of time. You're going to get maybe a 2% dividend yield over time. So now we're talking about 7%. And then you get about a 2% risk premium for owning stocks. And that's how you get to your 9%. That's the drivers of stocks long term. Everything else is just noise, because over time, all companies are not going to earn more than really 4 or 5% over a long period of time. And so that's the things you got to remember, is that those are that's the reality. That's what actually happens in the economy and in life. The other stuff, when you start to extrapolate 14%, you're just not going to get there. In the emerging markets, that has happened. But I don't know that those emerging markets exist anymore, because they don't have the laws like we have in the United States.
South Korea, come on.
Yeah. What, there's like 8 companies that trade in South Korea that matter?
I'm going to just get me a nice growth mutual fund. 12%.
So just to be clear about why Josh says that, is that comes from a guy in Tennessee named
Dave Ramsey,
who thinks that there are lots of growth mutual funds out there that return 12% over time.
I follow like all these Dave Ramsey clips on Twitter now, and the other day, there was one. I don't know how old it was, though, because he was like, no, you just need to trade and go get yourself a $100,000 condo. And I was just like,
well, it might be true in parts of Tennessee.
Sure, sure. But it's just interesting,
because
like the boomer worldview is very, very different than current reality.
All right, let's talk about something that Josh and I have both done this year. And you know, something that we think you should be doing if you are in a certain group. And so I think most people understand that if you make too much money, you cannot contribute to a Roth IRA. There are income limits in your ability to contribute to a Roth IRA. So if you're single and you make less than $153,000, you can contribute to a Roth. If you make over $153,000, you cannot contribute to a Roth. If you are married, if you make over $242,000, you cannot contribute to a Roth. So that a lot of our listeners are making more than that, and so they can't contribute to the Roth. There is a way, and it's called the backdoor Roth contribution. Just so you understand, contribution limits to Roth IRAs are, if you're under 50, it's $7,500. And if you're over 50, which I am now, I was able to contribute $8,600. So the catch up is $1,100. So here's how this works. You make a non-deductible contribution to your traditional IRA, and it can't have any money in there. So I have a traditional IRA that I had some money in, and I moved it into my 401k. So I have a traditional IRA without any assets in it. I made a non-deductible contribution to that traditional IRA, so I didn't get the tax benefit. And then I immediately convert that traditional IRA to a Roth IRA, thereby allowing me to make the Roth contribution even though I am over the income limits. The important thing to know is that there's a pro rata rule. So if you have any dollars invested in that traditional IRA, there's going to be a pro rata calculation on the money you're converting. And so you might be paying taxes twice. And so the only way that this works works well is if you have no money in that traditional IRA, you have to move that into a 401k or company and sponsored plan so that you can do this. And then importantly, you have to file form IRS form 8606 to report the non-deductible contribution and subsequent conversion on that form. And so the two things you got to look out for is make sure that you're not paying taxes twice. So there's that pro rata rule that exists, and then make sure you file the IRS form 8606 so that the IRS knows what you actually did. And so this is a way for you high earners to still contribute to your Roth IRA. Obviously, there's no income limit on the 401k and 403b, but there is on the IRA. All right, if you'd like to take us up on a free retirement view, one of us will give you an hour of our time to talk about anything in your financial life. Call our office to get one of those meetings scheduled, 800-743-0988, or email us, go to our website, northwestquadrantwealth.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about risk management for all you people retired, rebalancing. I know you don't want to do it, but you probably should. Stick around.
Sign up for our e-news today. Get the latest thoughts on the market every other week from Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management delivered right to your inbox. The short 5 to 6 minute video helps you keep up with the market. You can always watch past videos on YouTube or northwestquadrantwealth.com. Mission is clear. Give honest, transparent analysis and actionable advice every week. Make sure to connect with us on YouTube and get our twice monthly e-newsletter.
Welcome back. Thanks for joining us. If you would like to sign up for our e-newsletter, Josh and I do a video on the 15th and 30th of every month, and we send that out via email. To get added to the e-newsletter list, go to our website, northwestquadrantwealth.com. Just let us know you'd like to be added to the e-newsletter list, and we will get you added to that list. And that's the only thing that we will send you. So this data comes from the Federal Reserve. A record 33% of all household wealth here in America are held by people 70 years of age and older, which is by far a record. If you go back just to 2008, it was only 20%. So 13% increase in a relatively short period of time. The baby boomers are the richest generation we have ever had on a relative and absolute basis, and it's not even really close. So the baby boom generation, here's what Josh and I say. We thank you as a generation, but we also are scared to death when you start dying and are not working and are not sort of running things as you are now, because a lot of people, I guess, would say you're screwing up. But imagine when my generation, Gen X, and Josh's generation are running things. It's really something to be worried about. So, but a lot of you are as flush as you are because you sat across the table from somebody that went through the Great Depression. So, you know, you don't have any debt. You have really healthy investment accounts. Your income is quite good. And so it's a generation, you know, I just went to Europe a couple weeks ago, and all of the first class cabins and business class cabins are full of baby boomers, American baby boomers. And all the, I went to Taormina, which is the town where they shot the White Lotus in Italy. And all of those Four Season hotels are full of American baby boomers. So keep it going. We need you to keep spending that money because you are keeping us all afloat. Morgan Housel wrote a book that's really a really good book. He's written a few of them, but I took some snippets out of it. And one of the things he says is stability is the incubator of instability. And he was referring to the markets right now. When markets are calm, risk appetite grows and leverage increases. Complacency sets in, regulations loosen, everyone gets comfortable, and precisely because everything looks safe, that's when the catastrophic tail risk accumulates silently in the system. Does that remind you of anything happening right now? In 2008, the 2008 financial crisis didn't emerge from chaos. It emerged from 15 years of increasing calm and confidence, the so-called Great Moderation, which every major bank on earth believed that the risk had been permanently tamed. COVID-19 didn't wreck supply chains because the system was weak. It wrecked them because the system was optimized for efficiency. which is another word for fragile at scale. Ask your leadership team at your company this week, where in our business have we built structures that only survive because nothing bad has happened recently? That's not a rhetorical question. It's the most important operational audit you can run. I thought about that as it relates to Northwest Quadrant. We are, as he says, optimized for efficiency, which worries Josh and I all the time. It means great margins, but it does mean we maybe could increase our structures in some places where we are deficient. And that's true for every business, because all businesses are always going to want to optimize for efficiency. But, you know, we can see sometimes when that can go south quickly. All right. Risk management in the investment business is so utterly important. Josh and I are oftentimes hired by people that we think, man, this is a really smart person that is quite capable of managing their own portfolio, has the brains, has the ability, has the knowledge, all that stuff. Yet they hire us anyway. And sometimes it surprises us. But, you know, the one thing that I sort of pat us on the back all the time for is our risk management, not getting sucked into wanting to chase markets. We don't have FOMO. We understand fully how important this money is to our clients and staying retired and risk management and all of those things. That's the most important role we play in our clients' lives. Is not, we don't have anything that's going to blow up. We really care way more about the downside. The upside always takes care of itself. And so right now, I think in the industry, I think out there in the investment space in general, that has been lost. Risk management is, there's this sort of idea that like, everything's been tamed. We don't have to worry about it. The future's known. The Fed and the Treasury will take care of us if something goes wrong. And I think that's a really bad way to be looking at your investments. I always think about down before I worry about up. Up takes care of itself. Down is where you have to worry. And so,
well, and remember, like the very definition of rebalancing means you're selling winners and buying back, you know, safe risk-reducing assets.
But for you retirees, like the way that we think about creating income in retirement is having a big chunk of your money in hedged assets, assets that if stocks go down a lot, this is where that money's going to go, and these are the assets that will get you through a bear market. And so making sure that part of portfolio not only is the right investments, but also big enough so that you can withstand a bear market is really, really important. So Josh, let's talk about rebalancing. You know, obviously you can describe what it is, but then how we go about doing it and why it's flipping so darn important.
Well, rebalancing just means bringing back proportions to where you initially contemplated them to be. So, you know, for just simplistic purposes, like pretend you had a 50% allocation to stocks, 50% allocation to bonds. You know, over time, you know, 8 out of every 10 years, for instance, the stock market, you know, stocks tend to go up. So, you know, if you had that allocation, the stock allocation would grow relative to the fixed income allocation. And so when you rebalance, you're just selling off your winning stocks and buying back fixed income. The key thing to remember here is the more frequently you rebalance, because stocks tend to go up, the more you're compromising future returns. But you're also, you know, introducing a higher degree of stability, so less variance to your portfolio. So a lot of people out there in the accumulation phase, you know, if you're rebalancing annually per Vanguard, you know, that's probably a little bit too frequent. You need to give your winners time to run. So, you know, the optimal time for sort of a time-based rebalance is somewhere between 18 and every 24 months. You should maybe rebalance, bring your proportions back in line. But the idea of that is to take advantage of bull markets, let stocks run before you actually sell them. If you're a more conservative investor, you know, the optimal frequency for a time-based rebalance is you know, a year at the most, sometimes even less, because that's going to significantly reduce the variance in your portfolio. We're more what we call threshold-based rebalancers, which means, you know, we follow rules-based investing principles. So when a certain asset class maybe deviates too much of a percentage, we won't really tell you what that is in specific instances, but, you know, we will then do a threshold-based rebalance. So that brings our risk tolerances back in line, and it sort of removes the emotional decision-making from the process. So, you know, when small caps rip 100%, We're going to sell down some of our small cap position and bring it back to where we initially contemplated wanting it to be, based on a individual investor's risk tolerance.
Yeah, so I think in Josh's description of the two ways to rebalance, most of you out there listening have a 401k or you know your investment portfolio. Time-based is the easiest way for you to go about doing it
for
because
sure.
You're not going to want to create all the rules that Josh and I have created. But the most effective strategy is that threshold based, and it's how institutions do it. And, you know, like Josh said, if small caps, let's say our IGIR and VBR positions continue to rally, let's say for the next 18 months, and they really rip relative to the other asset classes in our portfolio, and let's say our 8% allocation to IJR now becomes a 12% allocation or 15% allocation, we have to rebalance that back to that original allocation. So it's the idea, remember, in the investment business, you're wanting to buy low and sell high. We'll be selling the thing that's done the best, and that money will get allocated to the asset classes that have done the worst. That is the definition of risk management. And, you know, like Josh said, for people in the accumulation phase that are accumulating assets, that's not as important. You want some of those winners to run. But if you are dependent on your portfolio for income and you're taking income from your portfolio, this risk management tool is unbelievably important in rebalancing so that you have the right amount in those risk reducers and you reduce the volatility of your portfolio in general. All right, if you'd like to take one of us up on a free retirement review, one of us will give you an hour of our time to talk about anything in your financial life. So if you have at least $750,000 of investable assets, call our office to get one of those meetings scheduled. The number here is 800-743-0988, or you can always go to our website and send us an email, northwestquadrantwealth.com. When we come back, we're going to do one last segment of email questions, so be sure to stick around.
Get your free one-hour retirement review. Meet with a Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management Investment Advisor today for free. It's our offer to you as a listener to the show. Give us a call today to schedule your portfolio review. 800-743-0988. Again, 800-743-0988. Free retirement review. Meet with a Northwest Quadrant Investment Advisor today for free. It's our offer to you as a listener to the show. Call us today to schedule your portfolio review. 800-743-0988. Again, 800-743-0988.
Thanks for joining us, everybody, on this 4th of July weekend. Hopefully everybody is having a wonderful 4th of July weekend and most importantly, being safe, including my children.
They're going to be at the Freedom Ride.
No, they're going to – I don't think so. They don't care about it either anymore. That's why I think it doesn't matter. It's not like a thing anymore.
It's not a alcohol-induced
free-for-all craze orgy
filled with 15-year-olds.
No, I think that is – I don't think that – I don't know. Mike, who knows? I know they're busy at that time, so – but anyways, everybody out there, be safe. I know most people that are doing the Freedom Ride are not listening to this radio station or this radio show. One of the things that we think is ultra, ultra, ultra important in when you think about your investing strategy and how you invest is liquidity. When Josh and I go about making our decisions about what is going to make it into our client portfolios or our portfolios included, is liquidity. If we can't sell. And, you know, when Josh and I sometimes make a trade, it's $30, $40, $50 million in and out of a security. So it has to have plenty of liquidity and plenty of shares traded on a daily basis. And so that's at the top of the list for us. If we can't press sell or buy and it doesn't execute immediately, we don't want any part of it. And, you know, our peers in the investment universe, in an attempt to get higher fees out of you, the investors, are coming up with all of these illiquid or semi-illiquid products. And some of these things, their liquidity is being challenged in a good market. Imagine if we have a bad market and a market sell-off, liquidity is going to evaporate. And so you want things that you can trade, shares of Microsoft or the S&P 500 index, you know, even in a falling market, you're going to have plenty of liquidity in those shares. Some of this illiquid garbage that you guys are buying or your financial advisors are selling to you, there is going to be no liquidity in a bad market environment.
It hasn't really been the focus of financial news channels as of late, but the sort of walled redemption requests, the redemption gates going on in the business development company BDC space are continuing, whether it's Cliffwater, Blue Owl, Blackstone, of these funds.
There were people on CNBC last week making fun of Jamie Dimon, saying that, when there's one contract, there's more. It's like, come on. Like, it makes me crazy.
I mean, I saw this week, like, Blue Owl had another $5 billion in redemption requests, and you get 5% of what you requested to get money back. So.
And that's in a good environment. Yeah, imagine when it's bad.
And they're not fire sailing anything. It's kind of engaging in financial engineering to sell out some of their more liquid positions to try to create liquidity for these requests. This is in like the best environment of all time. You're not able to get your money back. When there is a liquidation spiral in an actual recession, these things are like pennies on the dollar are what you're liable to get back.
Josh, we're never going to have another recession in America again. You didn't get the memo?
The end of the business cycle, right?
So the other thing that I like to bring up on the show occasionally is this book. I believe financial literacy is one of the most important things. It should be taught in every high school in America. And fortunately, it's not. But more and more high schools are embracing it. I know Summit High School here in Bend does it. And there's a book written by a guy named John Lim, L-I-M. He's an actual medical doctor. He wrote a book called How to Raise Your Child's Financial IQ. The most important thing. It's only 64 pages long. I recommend it highly. Go on Amazon. You can get it for like $6. And this guy's not paying us to promote it. He doesn't even know who we are. But again, John Lim, L-I-M, How to Raise Your Child's Financial IQ, The Most Important Things. All right. We got an email from Clark M. Clark says, ever since 2022, I have not been a fan of bond funds due to what happened to the bond market in 2022. In 2022, the bond market and the stock market took a beating. I thought bonds, in quotes, were supposed to be my portfolio stabilizer in retirement when stocks are down, especially when, as a retiree, I needed to sell something for income. As I continue to expand my knowledge on bonds, I recently heard of what is called a target date maturity bond fund, also known as a defined maturity ETF. iShares from BlackRock and BulletShares from Invesco both have them. Have you guys done a deep dive into these target bond maturity funds? If so, what are your thoughts?
We used to actually use them in the 2010s. So it's something that we are familiar with. You kind of look at it as... I'd say it's like a pretty good solution, especially shorter duration, but
not relative to what solutions are actually out there.
Yeah. It's like, it's sort of, you're paying a price, right? And the price is, they're more price sensitive than you would think, that they're still pretty small. So, relatively small fund flows sort of have pretty outsized influences on the price performance of those things. The better answer is probably just going and buying individual maturities. Especially depending on, how much money you're allocating to a bond ladder like that. In principle, the idea is really good. I think in practice, you're just better situated to go ahead and buy individual corporate bonds that like we do for clients.
Yeah, the truth is why we stopped using them is, like Josh said, the idea and like the construction of them, everything looks great. And I understand the sales pitch. And like we said, we used them. But the price sensitivity was ultimately where we had to stop using them. And that, when we think about, just like you, Clark, like when we have something in our portfolio that is there to reduce risk and to be there when stocks are selling off and to be holding up in value, these things were just way too price sensitive to moves in interest rates and dollar flows. And that's something we can't have in our fixed income. So, like the two solutions that we think are we have for our clients and we think are good for you, Clark, is, like Josh said, individual go out there and buy, you know, treasuries and corporates and all the different bonds that exist out there, staying relatively short in duration, or the two or three short duration ETF, bond ETFs that we use that are less price sensitive than these target date deals, and that's TFLO, TFLO, SHV, and VCSH. Those are, two of them are treasury. One's a floating rate treasury, one's just a short duration treasury, and the other is a investment grade corporate short duration from Vanguard. And so those are the ways that we build stability, true stability on the fixed income side of our client portfolios. You know, someday we'd like to be able to take duration risk and credit risk, but that's certainly not now. And so, Clark, and everybody out there listening, like, that our investment, universe, investment world, asset management business is great with coming up with products that sound great. And this one really, truly did sound great. And we, like you said, used it. But then in practice, that price sensitivity really got in the way for us and for our clients. And, they didn't really necessarily mature the way that we thought they were going to. And so ultimately, you can solve that problem either by buying those individual bonds in the different asset classes or buying those exchange traded funds, both in the treasury market and the investment grade corporate. But remember, you have to stay very short in duration for now, and you're not really giving up that much yield by staying short relative to the risk. All right, that's our show this week. We hope everybody has a happy and safe 4th of July. Remember, buy low, sell high. We'll see you next week.
Been listening to Partners of Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management on the radio show Financial Focus. Remember, you can email or call with your questions anytime during the week. Visit northwestquadrantwealth.com for more information. See you next week on Financial Focus. Any opinions expressed herein are given in good faith and are subject to change without notice and are only correct at the stated date of issue. Past performance is not always indicative of future results. This material is not intended as an offer or solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security or other financial instrument. Securities, financial instruments, or strategies mentioned may not be suitable for all investors. Prices, values, or income from an investment mentioned in this report may fall against the interest of the investor, and the investor may get back less than the amount invested. This material does not take into account your particular investment objectives, financial situation, or needs, and is not intended as a recommendation of particular securities, financial instruments, or strategies to you. Before acting on any recommendation on this material, you should consider whether it's suitable for your particular circumstances, and if necessary, seek professional advice.